Well, Walt Whitman said it better and shorter, but I worked really hard, so I'm going to say it not as well and longer, which is the difference between a poet and a preacher. That's actually true. As a teacher of comparative religion, I'm fascinated by all of our various religions, all of the ways that we try to express our sense of connection with the ineffable source of being, how we try to express our wonder at the mysteries of existence, not to mention of life, how we stand, if we're paying attention, in awe of those mysteries. And those mysteries, I don't mean in an anti-scientific way. Something can be mysterious and wonderful and miraculous and scientifically explicable. Something can be real and profound in our experience and ultimately ineffable. We can't put it into words. All of our religious systems, in some ways, try to do a couple of things. They try to tell us where we came from, what to do now, and where we're going. And that's also what our philosophers try to do, what our scientists try to do, what our political systems try to do. I love all of the various religions. I love looking at them, finding what is nourishing and inspirational in traditions that are not my own, and wondering sometimes what it is that people get from traditions that are wildly not my own and that may not speak to me, but I want to know why it speaks to them, not in a critical sense, but in a sense of wonderment. I look at the various religions, and some have God, mighty and male, with a deep, resonant voice, usually with an English accent, by the way. I don't know if you've noticed that. Very seldom does God talk like Woody Allen, but anyway. You have this very kind of God up there, sometimes angry, jealous, sometimes forgiving and loving and wonderful. Other religious traditions have gods who take care of the skies, the trees, the rivers, who are the kind of metaphors that we have for trying to understand nature. We have religious systems where God is very, very strict and, despite his loving kindness, will burn you in hell, and other religions that believe in a wide universal acceptance of human beings with all of our flaws, with all of our problems, with a kind of universal love that surpasses understanding. We have religions that have no God at all. Or many gods, or seem to have many gods, but it's really only one energy and one force. We have theologies with God outside of the universe pulling strings and everything is predetermined. And we have theologies where we have a radical freedom to choose our own destiny despite where we were born, how we were raised. There are all kinds of theories and all kinds of theologies, and I find them academically interesting, but I kind of end up with Walt Whitman, which is, our theologies are not our religions. Robert Heinlein says that theology has the same relationship to religion as history has to what actually happened, which is none to speak of. But still, it's interesting to see how people see and celebrate their own religions. Some religions have great lists of things that you must not eat. We're in one of those places now. And if we drive down the street to a mosque, we'll be in a place that has pretty much the same rules. Why can't we just all get along? There are religions that insist that we eat and drink. And almost every religion puts us through a path of binge and purge, feast days followed by fast days in order just to keep us confused. And we have religions that say after life you are going to get a fleshy, wonderful paradise. and other religions that say, no, you're going to be singing with the angels and listening to harp music, which is generally the Unitarian idea of hell. We have religions that say, if you're really good, you'll get nothing. But what did you expect? And some religions that just say nothing is the best that you can achieve to get to escape from this cycle of life and the wheel of being incarnate. We have all of these different religions with all of these different gods. We have religions that say you can't make a picture of a prophet or of your idea of God, and others that chisel out stones and statues and paint, others who will kill you if you make an idol or worship an idol. We have all of these practices and all of these beliefs, and sometimes you look around at the world and say, we're just never going to get it right. Because, as my wife said, and I have dined on this line of hers, that the fundamental problem with so many fundamentalists of all faith is that they forget the fundamentals of all faiths, which is decency and kindness and gratitude and mindfulness and service. We end up fighting about metaphors. One of the great things, and for all the people who are here for the first time, I'm going to do something that you shouldn't do with new people, and that is refer to a past service. But it was only last week, so at the coffee hour we'll catch you up. We had 17 of our young people making their own faith statements, and they were all over the place in terms of taking those 17. But inside each one of them was a coherent and thoughtful snapshot of their spiritual journey at that moment. It was wonderful. I don't think there was anyone in this room who felt threatened that one person said, I really believe in philosophy and I don't believe that there's a God or an afterlife. And another who said, I believe there's a God. I believe that there's something that watches over me that is accessible to me. Another who said, I believe Jesus Christ is exemplary and was special, and I really relate to that. We had every theological position in a community of kids who love each other. That's religion. Religion is not our dogma or our creed. It is religare. It is the sense that we are human beings bound up in the same search on the same earth with this wonderful miracle of life and the ability to think. So much of human history, so much of the human attitude seems to be, you know, this is what I believe, and if you believe anything different, you're just wrong. And not only are you wrong, but God really hates you. That's a little arrogant, speaking for God, whatever your theology is. I always liked Kurt Vonnegut. He created the idea of a church, of the first church of God, the utterly indifferent, saying that God created everything, then went on break, and doesn't really much care what's happening on the 57, which I think probably is true, at least the part about taking care of the 57. But so much of what human beings have done is to say, I'm right. 2 + 2 = 4, and anybody that believes that 3 + 1 = 4 is just damned. But not as damned as the people who believe that 5 - 1 = 4, who we really have to kill for their negative attitude. We just don't seem to be able to come to terms with the fact that we're arguing about metaphors, not about the substance of the religious life. The religious life, I would argue, is based, with all the wonderful differences and distinctions that we don't have to be threatened by that holy trinity of gratitude, mindfulness, and service, that in almost every political or psychological or religious system that I have observed, those are the fundamentals. And everything else is tradition, is decoration, is ritual to remind us of how to be. Ritual is a reminder for doing good things. It's not a replacement. If you follow all the rituals and it doesn't manifest itself in mindfulness and gratitude and service, you're just doing self-stimulation. Our rituals remind us to be present. This holy trinity of gratitude, mindfulness, and service doesn't need a psychology. It doesn't need a theology, just as the Golden Rule. We've got all these different iterations in every faith tradition of the Golden Rule and philosophy, too. We have the Jewish version of what is hateful to you, don't do to other people. We have the Christian version, do unto other people as you would have them do unto you. One in a negative, one in a positive. We could do a semester on the difference, and we could get into a fight. But why? Because at the heart of both of those iterations is the same fundamental concept of awareness and of consideration and of connectedness with others. We have it spoken in philosophical terms. Immanuel Kant's categorical imperative is the Golden Rule, but only made so that only three people can understand it. And that is, act as if the maxim of your action should be universalized to a general principle. We can do a course on that too, but it means do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We find it everywhere. It's so simple in concept, and we don't have to make it much more complicated. Having a sense of gratitude. Folks, we're alive for a while. Wow, that's just pretty amazing. What, scientific explanations, theological explanations, great. Explore the origins of life, but be present to the wonder of it, to have a sense of gratitude that in all of creation, in all the vast, unlimited expanse of time and energy that is the universe that we can not even see to the edges of, that some of that matter that exists, and we don't really know why, some of it is organized, well, not the Unitarian part, but some of it is organized into living things. And some of those living things can think and wonder and worship and weep, and some of them are in here right now with each other. And how in the vastness of the universe can we not go, we're a lot luckier than the rocks. And we're not as big as a nova, not as small as a singularity, but we are here and we are alive today with all of the pain, with all of the potential, with all of these miraculous powers that we have to see, to hear, to walk, to think, to reach out to each other, to love. Mindfulness, the second pretty obvious non-controversial thing, but we sometimes forget to be mindful, which is to be aware in our moments of what we are doing, of what our values are, and of what the blessings and the challenges, and those two things are related, are in our lives. To be mindful of how can we put our values together with how we react in the world. How we can look at our lives subspecie eternitatis, in light of eternity. I have a sense of examined values, and I have instincts that work assiduously against them. I try to be mindful, and that when I am at the supermarket and I see a person in the express lane with 11 items, I try to manage my blood pressure. I try to own myself into a Buddhist-like serenity, usually not terribly successfully, but it helps me begin to balance it. When I find somebody aiming at the parking place that God had consecrated for me, again, I start to get up, and then I go, just a second, in light of eternity, in terms of my values, do I really want to kill that person? Well, yes. No, not really. It's just an impulse, but a resistible impulse. And I am brought back from my non-mindfulness by saying, pay attention to how your values are affecting your actions, including actions that don't reach beyond your hands, the actions of your heartbeat, the actions of your blood pressure. The great Unitarian theologian John Luther Adams said that everyone has a God. You might argue about his use of the word God, but everyone has a God. It's the thing that they use to give their lives meaning. It's the source of passion. He said, you can tell me you don't have a God, but let me spend a week in your house, and I'll find out what makes you angry, what makes you passionate, what makes the veins on your neck just stand out. That's the organizing principle of your life. And examining our principles and then trying to mediate them through the veins on our necks is one of the great challenges of mindfulness, the reconciliation of the reality of the world, our examined values, and how we feel and what we do. And how we feel and what we do and how we have a sense of gratitude for this grace, this unearned gift of life and of reason and the potential for service is the critical issue. Otherwise, like ritual that doesn't lead anywhere, attitude of gratitude doesn't go anywhere unless it eventually finds expression in our hands and in our lives. In service, in doing something for others, in return and taking this gift of life and returning the gift to life, to taking all of the love that we can have and loving back, loving our world, not hating our world, loving our lives and the lives of others. That's service. And it doesn't have to be successful. It just has to be real. I think everybody, I'm assuming a cultural literacy or illiteracy here with It's a Wonderful Life, everybody is George Bailey. Our lives touch hundreds, thousands of people, directly and indirectly, as our touching goes on through the people whom we've touched, and in a good way or in a bad way. It goes out in large ripples. And George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life was lucky enough to have everybody show up during his lifetime so that he could hear the eulogies. And most of us will not, at least in my theology, actually hear our eulogies, but know that they're there. Know that we have affected, each of us, hundreds, thousands of people in so many ways that we can never know and will never know. Sometimes we are George Bailey, and sometimes we are Don Quixote. Sometimes we are jousting at windmills, and we will not be successful in the short run. We may go to an anti-war rally and the war continues. We may work hard for an anti-hate, pro-immigrant, whatever our issues are, and not see the results today. But what we put into the universe, those moments of enthusiasm, of striving, of working, give meaning to those moments. And unaccountable meaning to the great pool of life in which we all swim. Gratitude. It should be so easy. Look what we have, just being able to be here and think and love. Mindfulness, that's the thinking. That's the appreciation. That's the trying to bring together our values and our actions resulting in service. Sometimes we are dreaming an impossible dream. That's okay. Keep dreaming it. Sometimes we're reaching for an unreachable star. We should. If everything is reachable and easy, there's nothing challenging us to be better ourselves or to make this world better. This is a beautiful, imperfect world. And that's our challenge, and that's our blessing. That's our opportunity. That's our calling, to heal a broken world, to heal it with love, to look into everyone's system and everyone's heart, and to try to find those things that are nourishing, those characteristics that are inspirational. That, not the theology, I'm not anti-theology, it's fine, I teach theology, but religion is lived in here and in here and ultimately here as we reach out to touch life with and through each other. And I personally am very mindful of the great gift of community and of life. I'm very filled with a sense of gratitude, and our job is to give each other the energy to engage this world with lives of meaning and service. We don't have to win, but you can't win if you don't play. And sometimes that playing is playful, sometimes it's hard work, and we go through cycles of approach and avoidance, despair and joy, and that's all part of this cycle of life, of living, of loving, and of celebrating.